Well, let's start with prayer. Any prayer requests this morning? Keep praying for Sister Carol and her work with the little field she's in right now. She's reading some stories, starting to read some stories to her grandchildren. And we hope they enjoy those good, upbuilding stories about Christians and about children their age and how learning to respect parents and all of that, respect their elders, stories like that. So she's just starting doing some of that. Let's keep them in prayer. Those her grandchildren, their father is in jail now, and that's a very unfortunate thing. Any others you might have. So glad that Brother Andy keeps getting better and better. Real blessing. And thankful to have Monica here this morning too. God answers our prayers. And we have Sister Deborah too. That's a blessing. Let's thank the Lord for this. Dear God in heaven, praise you for your mercy, healing all our sicknesses, healing our sin as well, and bringing us back to you. And as prodigal sons, we just say, Father, thank you for giving us a place in your kingdom. Lord, we ask your mercy on us, for our failures, and not even appreciating in some moments what you've done for us, for Jesus. Thank you, dear God. And give us a song this morning, praising for your mercy. Amen. Okay. 11. Let's start with number 11. Okay, let's just form these words. We want to start singing to some elderly people. And we want them to know what we're singing about, don't we? We don't just want them to look at us and hear us singing. No, we want to just form our words carefully. And you do it more so than when you're speaking normally. To sing, it's a song. And we don't just act like we're talking to somebody. We're singing to the Lord and for the inspiration of ourselves and others. And so we want to get those consonants out. The people that in darkness sat. A glorious light of singing. And get it all out there. Those consonants. That way you'll understand what we're singing. And I've heard that recorded music, and you just can hardly hear what those people are saying. And they got pretty music. It's really good. It's so hard to hear what they're saying. Let's sing this song out of the Harmonia Sacra.
For as you are, so shall we form to one.
Sing this as notes first. We got to work on this. It's a little new to us. That's not right. Yeah. It's B flat, not D flat.
So
Doesn't it have some big words in there?
Yes.
Copious. Copious. What does copious mean? Let's ask Brother Kevin back here. I think he knows. Copious.
Plenty.
Plenty. Streams ever copious. Not just a little bit of water trickling along. There, it says they're gliding along, too. I just enjoy these English descriptions. What else?
Waste rise and verdure.
Verdure! What's verdure?
I don't know what that is.
Waste turns into verdure.
It's like grass. What's,
okay, but we're talking about a color here. What's green in Spanish? For sure, you all know. Sylvester. Remember? You got it. Who else?
Huh?
Oh, that's big. But you get close. Verde. Verde. Looks like verde. Virgin. Green. That's the word. Verger. It's green. Am I pronouncing that right, Wilbur? Verger. I think it is, yeah.
But one question. What is it referring to in the poetry? I don't understand the picture there. Is it wastes?
Okay. Wastes.
Uh-huh.
Rise in verger.
Waste as in like trash or in
yes.
Desert. Okay.
In Isaiah it says, the desert shall bloom forth as a rose.
Okay.
And all this valley of waste turning green.
I get it.
Just the desert just green right now.
Thank you.
Sure. What else? I think there was another word in here we needed to look at. What is an isle? An isle?
An island?
An island, yes. Isles of the ocean. Then how do we say, how do we pronounce, I'll just tell you, Jehovah, in our singing, pronounce it that way. You can hear that better than Jehovah. Jehovah. Rich flowers, long by the prophets of Israel foretold. Israel, remember? That's an exciting thing. Okay.
Thank you. Pray for me, glory, for excelling, oh, I determined, all love divine, let
Slow. sermon about prayer. A long, detailed sermon. And he talked all about prayer. But he thought he ought to have a song to go along with it. And he asked the newspaper man, James Montgomery, would you write a hymn for me? And James thought he'd try. He went ahead and wrote a hymn. Now we forget the sermon. But we remember the newsman's hymn, the newspaper man's hymn. And after that, the newspaper man, James Montgomery, he often had prayer meetings. He directed prayer meetings together. Just some Christians gathered together and they would have prayer meetings. One evening after another prayer meeting, he went into his room. And they went in a little later and found him. He was on the floor, unconscious, and died soon afterward. His watchword at the gate of death, he enters heaven with prayer. Remember anyone else who passed away on their knees?
David Livingstone.
Okay, yeah. Christopher Dock, that's who I was thinking of. David Livingstone was a missionary to Africa. What was the country in Africa? Well, it was several countries. Yeah, all of them. And Christopher Dock, who was he?
He was a school teacher.
Yes, Mennonite school teacher. And skipped back in Pennsylvania. And they found him. And he was praying after school for his students. He was praying after school, and he would always do that. But one evening he just didn't come home. So they went to check on him where he was. His hands folded in prayer, but he passed away. He was living. That'd be a good way to go. I have one more to tell about. We'll save it for another time. God bless you. You did good today. I'm good.
The assignment was kind of get someone that kept their armor even if the times got hard, like they kept on doing right. I read in the Coals of Fire at the beginning of World War I, there was a Quaker boy that his friends were saying how they're gonna, the only way to be safe is to get rid of the enemy, and so they're wanting to go off and fight. But he thought that they're willing to die for what they think is right, and he thought he would. So he went over to Persia, over where it was really bad. They'd been fighting for a while, and it was really bad. The lots of homeless people, and just a bad situation. So he went to help there with other people. And so he did the right thing. He was able to kind of keep his armor even though the times got hard.
I thought about Joshua and Caleb. The Israelites were tired, and they had been in the desert for 40 years, and they were afraid of the giants. They didn't want to go, but Joshua and Caleb, they trusted God and went on. And there was lots of people who didn't trust God, and they ended up not getting to go.
I read this story about this man in the 1700s in California. He, in Southern California, he was really poor. Well, he had lost, he had a whole herd of cattle, and he was really strong. He had a whole herd of cattle, and he left them to go find gold in California. And he didn't find any. When he came back, he found his cattle had run away. And so he went to Mexico and to see what he could do there, but he ended up just spending all his money except one peso, and he was really poor. And He just was really down about it, and he came back to California to the Catholic mission, and the monks at the mission, they would feed anybody who came for free and give them lodging. And he had an idea. He knew there was some very valuable silver candlesticks in there, and he thought at nighttime, while he was sleeping there, he would steal them, and then he would go down to Mexico and sell them for a lot of money. And when he was in there, the monks gave him food and whatever, and were really nice to him and showed him a room where he could sleep. And when he went to the room, he saw how easy it'd be to take those as soon as everything got quiet. But then he saw on the table there was this bowl full of silver coins. And at first he started to just stuff his pockets with them, but then it was too loud, so he started doing it quietly. And he saw on the side of the bowl it said that whoever's in greatest need to take those and depart in peace. And he thought, well, I'm definitely that person. And so he filled his pockets. He thought he could probably still steal the candlestick. So when he got in bed, he just kept thinking about it, thought he wouldn't steal the candlestick, but he'd still take all the money. But then the more he thought about it, he thought about all the poor Indians around there. There was like widows and orphans and things, and he was really strong, could easily find a job. So he got up, he put all the money back, and then he took his last peso out of his pocket and gave it and put it in the bowl. And then he left.
Right now, we've been reading a story before bed about a man that didn't used to be a Christian, and his life was just in a wreck. And then finally he went to church one time and became a Christian. And then it talks about how afterwards he was he had this dredging business, and it talks about a man that worked for him, and that man just worked so hard and just did such a good job, and if he was there, everything just seemed to go well. And that's just a real testimony, a good thing to take example of.
I thought of a story that I had heard, I think Brother Kevin, talk about a man being martyred, and it wasn't that he was being martyred that particularly stood out to me, but it was the way his wife was supporting him and said, hey, if you don't die for the Lord, you know, I respect your willingness to die for the Lord. Anyway, I thought that was neat. Maybe Kevin, could you fill in on it a little bit? Or maybe it's not in your mind right now, but all I know is what I just said, so.
David Livingstone was a missionary in Africa. No white man had ever been across Africa before because it was too dangerous. And he got some friendly natives and went across Africa, and there were like terrible mosquitoes and sickness and everything, and he got really sick, but he kept going. Finally, he got the whole way across and then helped. Converted a bunch of natives, and then that's a big way how people mapped Africa too.
There's a story in Maccabees about a woman and her seven sons, and they were keeping the law that their fathers had taught them and that God gave their fathers, and they were being tortured for it, I think. And they were all in jail, and they started torturing their first son, and he stuck it out, and they ended up killing him, and did that to all of her sons, and they all stood strong, and then they finally killed her, but they all stood strong to the end.
I thought about William Tyndale when he was translating the Bible. He had to be in constant hiding because of the Catholic Church didn't like that, so it was real hard for him, but he would just, as he was hiding in different spots, he would just work at it a little more, work at it, and finally got it done.
In the hiding place story, Corrie ten Boom and her family, it was in World War II, and they were helping all Jews out, and anyone who came to because they were hiding, and they were hiding them in a secret room. And finally, someone betrayed them, and the soldiers came and took them, and they put them, even the old, their Corey's father, who was a real old man, put him up in the back of the truck. And then the one of the soldiers said, I think, like the, yeah, one of the top soldiers there said that if the old man would behave himself, he could stay and die in his bed. But he said, if I stay, I'm going to open my door to anyone who comes and knocks. So they took him along, and he died in the hallway of the hospital, I think, and got put in an unmarked grave. So
We watched a movie one time. It's a true World War II story. This kid was growing up, and his dad was a drunk, and he was beating his mom one night or something, and he pulled a gun on him. And ever since then, or he felt bad about it. He said, I've never, prayed to God, he'll never touch a gun again. World War II broke out, and his brother, older brother, went, so he felt like he should go with his brother. But during training, they did all the training, and when it came time to learn how to shoot, he would not touch a gun. He went through a court, and they thought he was insane, so they're going to put him in some sort of rehab deal. And his dad had served in war, so and his dad came to his court and told him a story or something, and they let him go in war without a gun. And he went, it's one night, they all went in, they got pushed back, and he stayed up there, and he drove down, or brought down 71 guys in one night, just got one at a time. And every time he got one, he prayed just for one more, and he just, God just helped him, and he brought down, like, I don't know, it's like 80-some people, 80-some guys of his group down out of the enemy.
Read a story about during the Civil War, the Mennonites in the Shenandoah Valley were against fighting, but the Union soldiers would come through and make them join the army and fight. And one promised his mom that he wouldn't fight whatsoever, and they took him and put him in the army, and he said he wouldn't fight, so they put him on picket duty. And while he was there guarding the camp, he wondered what he was going to do if someone did come, because he couldn't shoot him. So he went back to the general and told him, I can't fight, and then later he got to go home back to his mom.
David gave up his armor and fought Goliath. When God had told Moses to lead God's people out of Egypt, he thought it was completely impossible and thought there was no way, but he just kept right on. God led him through.
Abraham was strong even when he knew that he had to sacrifice his son.